This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue hour number three rolling along here on Sports Map Radio. And again, the big news of the morning, there's two. Dan Snyder may sell the Commanders and the Astros with a combined no-hitter last night in Game 4 of the World Series, tied it up at 2. Back to the Dan Snyder situation. I think it's a big, big story because I think this is something that a lot of people have been wondering what exactly was going to happen with a team that always seems to be in the news for the wrong reason. There's not a lot of good news that have come out of Washington since 1999 when Dan Snyder bought this team. But it also... There is a soap opera quality here that is probably hidden from a lot of us. It is probably going on behind the scenes. I won't tell what's going on. We can't have this. We're going to use our power and our pull to get you to be in the process of selling the team. We don't know if Dan Snyder is going to sell the team. As we talked with Dave Preston in the last hour, there is just right now he's exploring the options with Bank of America Securities on the possible sale of this. But we don't know if he will. We don't know if he'll pull the trigger. But there feels like there has been enough from the NFL to say to him, look, enough. And it will be your best interest if you sell this team. And I don't know what threats they have on him or how they're manipulating the power, but they feel like they're manipulating the power. And one of the things that you don't want to do is you don't want to ever get kicked out of a league. People who get kicked out of the league really become social pariahs. Now, if you're a billionaire, who cares? But there is still a social aspect that you want to maintain. You can't be alone forever with your money. You want to be in country clubs. You want to go to dinner parties. You want to be around people. You can get bored really quickly when your whole life has been about money and there's nothing new to your life. Remember, Dan Snyder has been rich almost his entire adult life. It's not like if you or I won the lottery and was given the $750 million lump sum, we would find all sorts of new things to do and new experiences to have because now we all of a sudden have this wealth. He has had the wealth pretty much his entire life, all of at least his adult life. So there's nothing new and exciting for him. He's not going to want to be held up sitting in the middle of his house with all of his money and nobody to at least brag about it with or be around or to, you know, to talk about the different size boats he has. You don't want to be that person. Sell the team, find a way to put yourself back into sort of the upper echelon of rich people. But if you get kicked out, you become almost like poisonous. And even with all the money in the world, you don't want to be poisonous.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I want to take you. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go? Jamaica,
you're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Okay, so this is a Beach Boys song that probably gives them a ton of residuals to this day, right?
Right.
Like even because people use this in ads.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they sat around and went, what's a cool little tune that we can talk about maybe vacation destinations? They'll just use in ads for cruises and sandals and every other place forever and ever and ever. Where our grandkids will be still cashing the checks. Right? I mean, this is brilliant. Brilliant.
It was fantastic.
1988, throwback.
And it's a good song.
It's a
catchy song.
It's a catchy song, of course. There you go.
The number one song this week in 1988.
So Geraldo Rivera and the brawl on his set of his television talk show, Roy Innes attacking a bunch of skinhead Nazis, led
consoled
to a broken nose.
Listening to the song.
That's, yeah. It was a chair that was thrown. Geraldo's
I think it was a chair, broken. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a chair. And then it led to, of course, the people were attracted to that. And, of course, people started noticing, hey, let's get a little bit of this. And then the Jerry Springer show came, and it became, you know, became a
you had outrageous people. And then it got to a point where it was like, is it real or is it fake?
Yep.
But then I think, I would say, like, this is like the catalyst. Geraldo getting his nose broken on live, or not on live TV, but on a talk show, reality TV, real people, brought about the real world.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you know, I think there's something here where people want to see real people, not
real
just
people.
Actors.
Yeah. So then you end up with Jerry Springer with, like, I married a horse.
Right.
Like, God, Lee, are you kidding?
What's going on?
Yeah, but you know, it was always Jerry Springer to me was always the one about, like, you know, I'm sleeping around with my sister's boyfriend.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's always like these strange things. Like,
very
he
weird.
Don't love you. He loves me.
He loves me. Oh, my God. So funny. So funny. I remember there was a talk show once where there was this woman and she left her entire family. She left two kids and her husband for like a 16-year-old kid or something like that. It was like a young kid. And she was like 38, close to 40.
Right.
And her boy, her boy was, they had him on closed caption TV. Like they weren't even in the studio. They were on like satellite TV. And the boy looks at the camera and goes, "Mommy, you mean to tell me you love him more than you love us?" And it was like heartbreaking, but you couldn't help but laugh. It's just funny. Like these talk shows were just, they would find people who had no problems to just throw them on set.
Yeah.
And off you went. Nuts. Nuts. All right. I want to get to Tennessee, Georgia. That's the big game coming up this weekend. Listen, if you're going to watch one college football game, this is it. Number one versus number three. Thanks, Ohio State, by the way, for being good at football, that you had to get in the way of the SEC's one versus two party. But Georgia has got the number one defense in the country, one of the top defensive units in the country, because they're led by Kirby Smart, who is a defensive savant, for crying out loud. They are giving up 10.5 points per game this season, but they'll be going up against a Tennessee offense that's putting up almost 50 a contest. It's like 49.6 or something like that. And this is just going to be a match between what Josh Heupel does offensively to what Kirby Smart does defensively. And then, of course, you add Stetson Bennett and Brock Bowers and a couple of things that they can do offensively. And Georgia and Tennessee should be good. Tennessee's defense is not great. It's not great. And Georgia's is great. And Georgia can put some points on the board. But I got Tennessee winning this game. I think the Volunteers are rolling in a way that I haven't seen them roll in a very, very, very long time. And I love their offense. Now, if you subscribe to The Athletic, there's an article in The Athletic that talks about Tennessee's offense. It's a really good piece. So I advise you to watch. I mean, advise you to read it if you want to dive a little deeper into this game. Tennessee has a series of offensive plays, and one of the reasons that it's kind of defined by a lot of coaches as it's undefensible, in that you kind of see little versions of this in the NFL too, that receivers have two different routes that they can run based on coverage, that they're calling basically their own audible. So as a quarterback gets to the line of scrimmage, he senses the defense, he'll call an audible, and the receivers run the route because the quarterback and the receiver have to kind of be on the same page. I need to know where you're going, and so you need to go where I think you're going. But the way Tennessee has devised some of their offensive plays is that the receivers can choose what route they want to run based on the coverage that they're seeing based on their particular location on the line. And Hendon Hooker has to guess right in which direction his receivers are going to choose based on what he sees. So Hendon Hooker gets in the line of scrimmage. He sees a defensive formation. He then has to trust that what he is seeing is the same thing his receivers are seeing, and that they're going to make the decision to run the A route rather than the B route at the line of scrimmage. And therefore, the receivers are calling almost their own audibles. So if the linebacker comes in or the defensive back comes in, they may choose to go deep. They may choose to go slant. Hooker and his receivers are so good at knowing what each other are going to do that this is one of the reasons why his receivers are open. They go vertical more than any team in the nation in terms of being able to go downfield. That's how good this offense is designed. Now, if you're going to play against that defense defensively, you have to dummy up your defensive schemes to confuse that. So you have to figure out where they're going based on certain circumstances, and then you've got to get your defenders to be able to go the opposite of what the receiver is anticipating that you're doing. It's going to be really, really complicated for Kirby Smart and this Georgia team to be 100% in on what Josh Heupel is going to devise for this game. I would not be surprised if Kirby Smart, because you see teams do this a lot, if Kirby Smart has not had a few people working on this constantly while the team is getting ready for other games. He's pulled a few people to the side. You're going to break down these weeks before, because when we play Tennessee, what we're hearing in Knoxville is going to be magnificent. This is an electrifying, one of those electrifying games that is going to bring out the best of both coaches. And I think Tennessee is going to win this game. I'm leaning on Tennessee winning this game, but again, Kirby Smart's a really smart defensive guy. But I don't know. I like Georgia, and I like Stetson Bennett, and I like Brock Bowers. He's an NFL tight end there. I honestly do not know if Georgia can keep pace offensively. And that comes with a not-so-good Tennessee defense. And Tennessee defense is good. Don't get me wrong. It's not terrible. It's not a sieve. But it's not Georgia good. But if Hendon Hooker is confused, or if those receivers are caught in traps, then it could be a long night for Tennessee. But I'm just trusting Heupel and what he's doing. I think this is so much. You can get caught up in 1 versus 2, 1 versus 3. You can just get caught up in that little number that's next to the teams, and that's fine. And I think the hype for it, because of the little numbers next to the teams, is valuable. But I'm not selling you on the little numbers. I'm selling you on what Tennessee is doing and what Georgia does as a matchup between two brilliant people at what they are focused in on for their careers. Josh Heupel has taken one of the more explosive offenses that we've seen in college football in UCF and transitioned that on the SEC level at Tennessee in his second year. He has taken an absolute bottom-fed program that was getting a little better under Jeremy. We heard this for years here. They're a little better. They're getting a little. It's coming together. And they look like it. He went, no, microscopic progress is not what I'm interested in. By the second year of this thing, we're going to have a Heisman Trophy candidate. And we're going to be number one in the country. That's what he did. But. Kirby Smart's no joke. He will mess you up defensively. He will shut you down. And he has a way of his offense has a way of getting points and can get them in buckets. And when you compare that to a defense that is just a stone wall. I mean, we asked people about this at the beginning of the season. You know, Georgia's rolling along. They took Oregon completely out of their game. To be honest with you, it almost made Oregon a joke. Like, that game at the beginning of the season made Oregon look like they didn't even belong in any conversation that included any top teams in the country. And now Oregon is one of the top teams in the country. But they completely took Oregon out of their game, embarrassed them, humiliated them. Get this Pac-12 garbage out of here. And we started asking people at the beginning of the season, look, there's a whole bunch of players that have moved on to the NFL. They've got some players from last year, but now some players have moved on. Is there any statistical comparison, though, that we can start making about the early Georgia games to what they were doing this year compared to what they did last year winning the national championship? And how many people did we have? I asked that, I think, to about three different people. Then all three said, yeah, there actually is. And this team is statistically better. Well, we've had more games now, and maybe that's been skewed. They didn't blow Missouri out on the road. Now, then Kent State scored more points than people thought. But the reality of it is that Kirby Smart's no joke when it comes to defensive schemes. But Josh Heupel is messing people up. I think Nick Saban is one of the most brilliant football coaches of all. Pro, college, name it. I think he's one of the more brilliant guys in analyzing, and he puts people in the right position at Alabama. But they got torched. And if it wasn't for their offense being able to sort of keep pace and take advantage of a few mistakes, like the fumble return for a score late in the game, and getting back into that football game and let Bryce Young have a career game, for crying out loud, then they would have annihilated Alabama. But they made the Bama defense, which has always been pretty good, and they just annihilated them. And so, in that regards, I think this game is not just sellable from a 1 versus 3, because that's going to be automatic, right? Look at the two. Just watch the receivers for Tennessee. Watch the way they will mix things up and find the way to get. I've not seen a team like this get receivers open better than Tennessee, and it's fascinating. fascinating how he's been able to make that work so quickly. In a sport, think about this sport for – that's one of the reasons I love football so much, because it's like baseball. You know what? You ever see a story of a young kid from the minors and he gets his major league debut, right? What happens when he gets his major league debut? Right? A lot of times he gets out there, and if he's not caught up in the moment, he'll have a great outing, right? It's like, hey, look at this kid. He's coming from Lynchburg, right? And he pitches 6 2/3. He allowed 2 hits, had 6. What happens the next time, right? When the professional baseball hitters start reviewing tape, they all of a sudden, now they get to him, right? They start noticing things. They see how his fastball moves, see how his curveball moves. They figure him out, right? And football is very, it's like that. It's like that. It's like Tennessee's the hot thing right now. SEC coaches are going to dissect all of this up. Heupel's going to have to change up what he does down the road because it's not going to work forever. But it's been a great year in the Eastern Division from that standpoint of watching Tennessee emerge as a challenge to Georgia. Because I'll be honest with you, Georgia should have rolled through this. If Tennessee was in their building year still, like, yeah, we don't want, it's in year two, still things are still being implemented, the right players are still coming to the program, still trying to find this missing piece, that missing piece, Georgia would have annihilated everybody. They would have won this thing. Florida's not up to it. South Carolina's not up to it. If Tennessee had taken a step back, they wouldn't have been up to it. They would have been comfortably cruising. But Tennessee has made that division a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And Josh Heupel has made the SEC a lot of fun. All right, we'll continue. We're going to talk Brooklyn Nets coming up later in the show as they are a complete and utter mess. Ime Udoka being hired as head coach, is that true? And what in the world is going on with Kyrie Irving? That's all coming up at 40 past the hour in 15 minutes. We continue with the Wake Up Call. The locomotion.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Oh, come on, man. This is Kylie Minogue. She's an Australian treasure, isn't she?
Yeah.
Would you say that?
First Lady of Australia?
Is that true?
No, I don't think it's that far.
Is she as popular as Paul Hogan? Crocodile Dundee?
Man, because Paul Hogan definitely was the first man.
He was, yeah. Of Greg Norman?
Nah, I think I would go Paul Hogan over Greg
Men
Norman.
Men at Work?
Yeah, still going Paul Hogan.
Paul Hogan?
Yeah. I think the most famous person probably to come out of Australia, though, would probably be Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman?
I think he's Australian.
Yeah, I think he's Australian. I don't know.
But yeah, Kylie Minogue is up there.
I was going to say Kylie Minogue has got to be up there.
Mm-hmm.
So 1988, throwback.
30. At least for us.
Yeah, Kylie Minogue. I mean, why wouldn't you? 1988 on a throwback Thursday. Such a busy, fun day yesterday. We're still like dissecting
the last
NFL
2 days.
Deadline. Last 2 days.
Last 2 days of sport has been ridiculous.
Fantastic. Alex Schiffer is going to join us at 40 past to talk about the Brooklyn Nets.
You know what I love? Like the last 2 days of sport, because Tuesday was kind of like there was a little bit of a lull because of the Astros being rained out.
Right.
You know, and you had a crappy Monday Night Football game. So Tuesday, you're like, oh, man, what are we going to talk about?
Exactly.
And then it was all of a sudden, it was just story after story after story. I mean, it started with the Nets and then went to the NFL trade deadline. And then the World Series was like, can we join in the fun, guys? And then yesterday, the NFL was like trying to sit there and go, no, we're taking it all back.
You cannot argue. I don't think you can argue that the World Series has had a better two-game stretch than happened in the last 2 games because
Without
of the historic nature of it. Because, again, there's not a lot to choose from the standpoint of a no-hitter after a team hit 5 home runs in a game to set a record and then a no-hitter for the second time in sports history. I was reminded of, not that long ago, that we had that – remember that crazy World Series video game between the Astros and the Dodgers not that long ago?
Game 5, 2017.
Yeah, it was just nuts. I mean, teams were
fantastic, scoring
3 runs here and then 3 more runs, and they had no –
It was like 30 home runs in that game.
It was crazy. Crazy. But I have no idea what followed it and what preceded it. I don't know. Like,
right.
I don't remember much about it. But these two games, to see a 7-0 victory, clean – 5 home runs that shut your opponent down, and then a no hitter. Flip the result And the other team went, okay, we'll match your five home runs with a combined no-hitter.
Ooh.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And so that just to me was just, again, I love watching those kind of moments where I'm like, can't turn away, cannot stop, cannot turn away, and just hanging on to it. Because even in the first couple of innings, I wasn't paying much attention. And it wasn't until about the fifth inning that I started going, all right, now I'm in. I'm into this thing now. This is pretty good. Figuring out where this is going. And if Christian – and I had a weird feeling that he wasn't going to go the distance because I just don't think managers are doing that these days.
Yeah.
That's just not what – that's not what we're doing.
But in the back of my mind, I said if there is a manager that would do it, it would be Dusty.
Right, right. But is Javier going to be – can he be utilized at all in a seventh game coming out of the pen?
Maybe.
Or anything like that? Like, where is the rotation at? Because hey, I don't know if I trust Lance McCullers anymore.
Our friend Steve Gardner had a tweet.
Okay.
That he at first he was like kind of was chastising Dusty, going, "What are you doing? He's on fire. Pitch count is still low. Why are you pulling him after five or after six or whatever it was?" And then like moments later, he was like, I like to retract that previous tweet because I realize it's not about the no-hitter. It's about winning game four of the World Series.
You're right. Exactly. And that's exactly. That's all it is.
You win game four. Who cares about the no-hitter? If you get that, that's like, you know, the cherry on top.
But haven't we always seen this in the past where what's the – if you're mowing everybody down, okay, and you have a 5-0 lead – what's the worst thing that is going to happen to you in that moment in any given at bat? You're going to give up a home run, one. Then you get them out of there. Then you say, okay, you did it. You went as far as you could go. Even if you give up a base hit, I would say that's it. Your only reason you were pitching was because of this historic moment. But we would have gone if you had scattered four hits, maybe given up one run in over six. We would have pulled you for this. For these relievers. Now that you've given up the hit, we're going to that plan.
Yeah, but you know what? I can't blame Dusty for the move.
But here's why. So you've got Justin Verlander going tonight, right? You're going to have Framber Valdez go in game six. You can't go to McCullers in game three, can you? I mean, game seven.
Ooh. Ooh.
You can't go Lance McCullers in game seven. With the way they were teeing off on his pitches?
Now, if there's a game seven.
If there's a game seven. Yep. And you have to plan for a game seven. And you have, if you're Dusty, you have to plan for a game seven. So if you are, I'm going to go Verlander tonight. I got the day off. I go Framber Valdez in game six at home on Saturday. Sunday, I'm down to Lance McCullers. No. If I get Christian Javier out of this game in six, I may be able to get him on 3 days rest. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I may get to Christian Javier in game seven on 3 days. If I don't need a game seven, then that's fine. But I may need him to start because McCullers gave up five home runs and the Phillies were whispering to each other prior to every at-bat. I can't utilize that in a game seven.
I can. You can't. I don't even think you can bring him in out of the pen. Uh-huh.
So I think
McCullers had his World Series moment.
That's where I would go. That's why I think Dusty is right here. He's got to win the World Series. He's not trying to set history. He's got to win the World Series. If I don't utilize his arm, I get him out of there in six, at a very efficient six, I can bring him back Sunday. And right now, tell me the pitcher that you'd want in a game seven that's available to you. You can't have Framber. And Verlander doesn't win games in the World Series.
He doesn't.
Who would you want in a game seven right now that you could get? Christian Javier.
I mean, would you be nervous pitching Verlander tomorrow?
I'm nervous.
Tonight, I mean.
I'm nervous about pitching tonight. The guy has had more than ample opportunities to win a World Series game in his career.
He just can't do it.
He can't do it. He can't do it. So I like Baker. Decision on that because, again, the ultimate goal is to win this series. Again, the Yankees won the 56 World Series, right? When if they hadn't, you'd still remember the perfect game. The Astros have a no-hitter, but if the Phillies win this thing in six, it's like, yeah, they had a no-hitter in a series they lost. You've got to win the series. Let history speak for itself. They got it in, but go with Christian Javier in game seven if you get a game seven, rather than a guy that just keeps giving up meatballs that are hit out of every single park. All right, we'll continue next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com. Brooklyn Nets at 2-6 have just fired Steve Nash as their head coach. Problems, obviously, with Kyrie Irving and the controversy surrounding him. It's kind of a mess in Brooklyn right now. Let's sort it all out. Alex Schiffer joins us from The Athletic, covers the Nets. How are you, my friend?
You call this a mess, given everything that's happened the past few years. I call this Thursday.
I gotcha. I totally understand. Let's get Steve Nash real quick. Given the off-season conversation of, I want him fired, and then he gets fired, was it more than just the fact that they were the wins and losses, or was there a lot more to the dismissal?
I mean, that was obviously a big part of it. You know, he came into the season, as you said, with some heat under his seat. At the same time, you know, it just seems like his voice was stopped resonating with the team, and that was the bigger problem. And obviously, the Nets are under a rapidly shrinking title contention window, and there's only, you know, they don't have any draft picks in the James Harden trade. They only have so much to barter with right now. Something has to be done, and this was really one of the only moves they had.
Let's get to Ime Udoka. Is that what's really happening? Are they going to make a move on Ime Udoka?
Yeah, I'm expecting it to be announced any hour now, and it wouldn't stun me if he's coaching tomorrow night in D.C. I have a suitcase pack expecting him to coach in D.C. tomorrow, but obviously that could change.
I felt like, and again, I'm asking you to talk about something in another city here, but I was kind of under the impression, a lot of us were, that situation in Boston was so deep it made him damaged goods. Did that ease up, or was that just really not true?
You know, it's tough for me to say, as you said, because obviously I haven't reported on that extensively right. When it happened. But you know, there's only been so much of what actually happened released. You know, we'll see if Ime, assuming he still is the hire, has anything more to share on that. But right now, it's been such a bizarre handling of events in that situation. I think that. It clearly wasn't bad enough to fully end his coaching career. And again, maybe he can shed more light on that subject. But certainly not the good optics look given everything with Kyrie and now bringing on him regardless.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to, and that's kind of the reason why I asked that question. So we're dealing with a guy that's got sort of this controversy. We don't really know the details, but it's still controversial. There's still a discussion about exactly what's going on and what led to the suspension. And then you add Kyrie. It feels like now the Nets are in a position where their coach and one of their star players is in a situation where it's all about off-the-court stuff rather than what they're doing on the court.
That's exactly right. I mean, the Kyrie Irving situation, they put a statement out last night with them in the ADL, and apparently he's supposed to talk to us today. I'm actually talking to you guys on my way to practice right now, so we'll see if that holds up. But yeah, I mean, you know, you say it's all off the court. On the court hasn't gone very well either. I mean, they're 2-6. They just choked away a lead to the Bulls. They have the Wizards and Hornets coming up, two winnable games. Whether it's Ime, Jacques Vaughn, or another coach, you know, they have their work cut out for them to really salvage the season.
There are athletes who run to the beat of their own drum. I get that. I've seen that over and over again. I feel like Kyrie is just poking and poking and poking. What is your assessment of where he is and why he continues to sort of swim in controversy all the time?
Yeah, you know, there's always something with him. He definitely marches to his own beat. You know, in a bizarre way, you kind of got to give him props just in that he does not back down when he develops an opinion. While some people run off that mountain once they realize it's not the best idea, he goes down with the ship. But it's kind of crazy how there's just always something with him. Last year was the vaccine. His first year was the shoulder. You know, the personal absences in between. There's just always been something with him. And it's just crazy how he always finds another way back in the news one way or another.
All right, let's get to the basketball part of this, because when they are on the court, like you said, you can have all the controversy you want, but if you're getting wins, that's one thing. But if you're getting losses, it's certainly another, and they are getting losses. What is not gelling? How has Ben Simmons been acclimated to this? How is it all not working?
I mean, yeah, first of all, there's not really a Swiss cheese metaphor I can use defensively, because it's even worse than that. They're just non-existent defensively. Ben Simmons has looked bad when he's played, and then he has a knee soreness now. You know, he might not play for another few more games. So, I mean, it's been tough to acclimate him both from a rust and a just availability standpoint. And then they have other guys coming off long layoffs like Joe Harris, Seth Curry, T.J. Warren is still waiting in the wings. So, and even when they have their three-point shooters healthy, I mean, they're, I think, in the bottom five of the league in three-point shooting, which is not what was to be expected with a team that has Patty Mills, Seth Curry, and Joe Harris as complimentary shooters, the Kyrie and Kevin. So a little bit of everything. That's why I said whoever comes in as they work it out, I mean, they have a lot of problems to fix.
Ime Udoka, if he is indeed the hire, I know he had a period of time in Brooklyn. Do the players know him well enough? Do they like him? Is there any early buzz on his relationship with the guys on this team?
Yeah, you know, he knows a lot of these guys. I mean, he was with Patty Mills in San Antonio, Kevin Durant with Team USA. A good amount of guys that, as you said, were here from his time when his 1 year in Brooklyn. A lot of the guys liked him when he was in Brooklyn. So he comes in with previous relationships, familiarity. He also comes in with a different roster than the one he inherited in Boston, though, which is why it's going to be interesting to see what he can do, because they are a flawed roster. They are limited defensively. And to expect him to do what he did in Boston, I think right now, is just unrealistic given everything we've been talking about this morning.
Kevin Durant has always appeared to be a kind of a bigger thinker, right? Who just looks at, kind of evaluates the whole picture here. How is he reacting to all of this? Has he said anything about Kyrie's situation, Steve Nash? Has he kept quiet? How has he reacted to all of this?
Yeah, you know, he said he was surprised about the Steve Nash news, which surprised me a little bit, just because I kind of felt like the team had some idea that something could be coming, especially going into the season. You know, when asked about Kyrie Irving's situation, he said that it hasn't impacted their play and has been more blown up by the media. So he's been a little bit all over the map. And, you know, I asked him last game, I said, what do you think the new coach has to have? I'm not saying you're hiring him or going to have a say, but what do you think that the new guy has to have that Steve didn't? And he's just like, I don't know. He's like, and honestly, man, I don't know. That's why I asked the question. So he said, Joe, high IQ, just a good coach. So he's been a little bit all over the map and tough to read on a lot of this, frankly.
That's obviously a weird question, given that the talent is on this team. So to ask if it's fixable, it seems like it's an honest answer. But is there more to this? I mean, is it just not just talent? Is this fixable?
That's a great question, and it's the question. I think it's fixable, but I think there's a ceiling there. You know, I think the Nets, like I said, they're limited defensively. They have a lot of guys, you know, 6'1", 6'2", that are only going to give you so much help there. I think that their offense needs to carry their defense. They need to be a top-5 offense if they want to go far. And, I mean, the defense, again, like they're bottom in the league, so the bar there for improvement is pretty low. So I think it's fixable. I think that they have there's still a playoff team there. Is it a team that's still going to be playing in late May, early June? I doubt it. But I do think that they can go back into relevance. For sure.
All right, Alex, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's busy down there in practice, so I really appreciate you taking some time to help us sort out the mess that's now the Brooklyn Nets. Appreciate it, my man.
Thank you.
You got it. Alex Schiffer, as you could probably tell towards the end of that interview, getting a little bit more exciting wherever he was, considering he was covering Brooklyn Nets' workout this morning. But he's right. It's for him, it's a Tuesday. For us, it's just the mess that's the Brooklyn Nets. The Ime Udoka thing, though, I don't know when I'm going to be able to shake it until I really know more details. And that's not even my business, to be honest with you. But I'm just out of just sports curiosity. It is amazing to me when you've got a player in Kyrie Irving that just swims in controversy all the time. And as I said to him, it feels like it's not just a guy that marches to his own drummer beat, right? It's not just, it feels like he's poking the bear all the time. Oh, you think about you think I'm controversial with the vaccine? How about I'm controversial with this? How about I'm controversial with this? How about I'm also controversial with this? And it's just like, he feels like he's just pushing and pushing and pushing the limits to how far either the league will take him, the Nets will take him, the public will take him. Right. And then, okay, all right, but we get it. We've kind of done this song and dance with Kyrie before. This you know, anti-Semitic tweet that he put out where it was a link to a documentary filled with anti-Semitism. Understand it, all right? Because that's probably one of the worst things he did. But the reality of it is, he gets and swims in controversy all the time. And so what do you do if you are Brooklyn? How do you fix this, right? Do you go out and do you get a coach that is kind of been waiting around, maybe willing to jump into a team, smart guy just outside looking in right now? Do you call somebody out of retirement? Do you promote a young upcoming coach? A guy that should be taking over a job, a guy that may have been turned down in a couple of interviews, but you know deep down has the potential to be a great coach. No, you don't do any of those things. No. You go get Ime Udoka because he led the Celtics to the NBA Finals in his first year in a way in which he treated star players in a way that said, I know how to reach my guys to make it an enjoyable run here in Boston. All the good things that Ime Udoka did. Oh, but by the way, he's swimming in his own controversy that's not going to go away in the fishbowl that is New York. Right? That's, to me, it's remarkable.
Do you
that
give,
they're doing this.
Do you give Kyrie one more season or like one with Ime Udoka?
He's great.
And how does Ime Udoka's suspension carry over?
See, that's what I'm. I don't think it's a suspension by the league. So I think he can just coach right away. So I think he can coach immediately.
Yeah, he's not suspended by the Nets.
No, he just can't work for the Celtics anymore. As you and I were talking about, as we've tried to dissect that story as best we possibly could, given the limited information that we had, but just based on our experience in corporate life, it just seems like it's one of those HR things where they're just like, he can't work here because if he works here, we're subject to a lawsuit.
Yeah.
So he can't be here. So we'll suspend him because we're working out the details on his exit strategy. That's basically how corporations work. I said this many times. When you're fired from a company, it is never like Donald Trump at a desk. You're fired. It's always HR taking its time. You get suspended. They go through legal. They make sure all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed. And then they sit you down and they go, we got to let you go. Right? So Ime Udoka violated company policy by dating that woman and probably using vulgar language is what's being reported out of The Athletic.
And
okay.
What we need to remember, you know, to add to that, it's Celtics.
It's
company
the Celtics.
Policy. Because like I said earlier, it's like if he went to the Lakers.
Sure.
There's no, I don't believe there's company policy.
Doesn't seem to be.
It would be fine.
So now you've got the media feasting on Kyrie's controversy. Now Ime Udoka comes in. You think they're just going to go, yeah, whatever. It's all right. He's got a little story.
Well, take the controversy out of it. And Ime Udoka comes in, he coaches, and you know, he's the head coach. Do we see a change in Kyrie, or is this kind of like, hey, Kyrie, you got this season to kind of get your act together? Because if I'm the Nets, I know you probably are in the hole owing him a ton of money.
Right,
but
still.
I would say finish out this season just because it's one less thing on his contract and cut him.
I can't imagine it's this one relationship. It's one headache after another.
Yeah, if you're wanting to kind of like revamp your team, you know, get a better look. I mean, it's just this whole process has not worked for you guys at all since day one.
It's amazing, and if you follow the NBA, we've seen teams like where you think are going to be good, they're not. This could be one of the worst periods of time any superstar-led team has ever been.
Oh, it is. I wouldn't say it's going to be one. It is.
We're going to look back on the Brooklyn Nets with James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving doing absolutely nothing with it.
Yeah.
Because one of his players can only play on the road.
Yep.
Right, and then one of the other guys was so sick of it, he was like, get me the hell out of here, man. I'm out of here. I can't do it. And then what do they do?
Ben Simmons.
Traded to a team. And the other team gets a useless basketball player who's always hurt and won't shoot. I mean, you could write a comedy movie about this.
There was a question posed to me, and I absolutely loved it yesterday. Is Ben Simmons left-handed or right-handed?
That is great. What a great.
And I sat there and I was like, that's a great question. I have no clue.
Golly, Ben Simmons. All right, we'll come back, wrap up this. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
We had to do this, right?
You got it.
Were you waiting all day to bring out the Rickroll?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well done. 1988, Throwback Thursday, Geraldo Rivera's show. Roy Innes causes a fight with some skinhead Nazis and all hell broke loose. And reality television and trash talk TV was born.
Pretty much.
It's our Throwback Thursday. Hey, kids, listen to this real quick. This song, right? So when I was in high school, I was really good friends with the prettiest girl in my class. Really pretty girl. Her name was Jennifer. And she loved this song. And on Valentine's Day, I gave her a rose that I could buy at the school, and I wrote the lyrics to the song that she liked. Back then, you didn't have internet, so I had to kind of listen to it over and over again.
And rewind it.
Yeah. I gave it to her for Valentine's Day. 30-plus years later, she still sends me little Rick Ashley notes.
Aww.
30-something years later. Anytime she hears Rick Ashley, or she always tags me in it and goes, "Remember this?" So you never know. You could have a lot. He's still friends to this day. So that's the Rick Ashley line. So you never know, even as you get older. So there you go. Rick Ashley still kicking around. Rick Rolia on the final hour of a final segment of this hour. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Busy, busy day yesterday.